8th of January, we filmed the first episode of Devil Walk.
Yeah.
Damn. That's gone quick, man. 20 days. 20 days to start off the whole new season. By the way, I'm going to be like a nuisance this whole time. Because look at me. I've got a wireless headset and I'm just like, I'm just rocking backwards and forwards on a chair. I'm going to
have to. I can only drive back and
forth. Oh, dear. How you been, man? You good?
Yeah. Been really good. Been in London for a little bit. Been to a local hockey game. I tried yoga.
Wait a sec. You went to London for a local hockey game, or you went to London for football?
That's more the general things that I've been doing for the past 20 days. I went to London, watched a North London derby between Arsenal and Spurs.
How did that go for you?
Well, I was quite prepared initially for losing. I'm a Spurs fan, so Arsenal did win. But it was really cool to be in that kind of atmosphere. Very hostile English drunk people, walking to the stadium, hearing kind of like a group of Arsenal fans like singing how Tottenham is, and like kind of walking through that that journey. It was an amazing experience. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Had a good time, and I was prepared that we would lose because Tottenham is pretty bad right now, if I'm completely honest.
Don't worry, you could be worse. You could be a Man United fan. We don't win. Anything, man.
You're above us in the league table right now, so.
Yeah, but I've become so lack of faith in the whole team. It's like, I think this is probably the worst period of ever being a Man United fan. Like I tell you now, I'm not even watching games. I just message my stepdad. I hear him give me an update on the games, and I'm like, okay. Pretty glad I didn't see that. You know, my sanity and my mood has been spared. Everything's good.
And my mood has not been spared. I've been watching pretty much every time.
You don't miss, though. You don't miss.
I, like, my whole day is just ruined. I'm
it's
way
quite
too
funny,
committed
though,
to it.
Because you mentioned, like, the football culture. The last game I saw, I went to see, it was on, it was like the Christmas to New Year's games, and it was Chelsea-Liverpool. A friend of mine gave me tickets for it, and I was in the Chelsea side, so a bunch of us went, and obviously I'm a Man United fan, so I'm just enjoying, like, my mates
football.
Losing their mind. Yeah, I'm just enjoying the football, watching my mates lose their minds, and mate, oh my God. Do you know what? I felt bad, because obviously there's some words I use a lot, and, like, they're not appropriate language, but, like, there's at that time a lot of dads are taking their kids and stuff as well. I started to think, like, come on, boys. Like, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm getting older, but I'm like, come on, you got to be more careful about this. Because, like, there was literally like a 5-6 year old, and this guy's dreaming, referees, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, kids, yeah. Right there, like, right there, man. Like, come on, like, have your fun outside afterwards or whatever. But it was a very good game, but I just remember thinking, even as a British person, we can be a little bit too much sometimes. Like, it's
I mean, yes. I mean, I'll tell you, from my perspective, I went into, like, the Arsenal stand. So I was an imposter.
Did you have a shirt on?
No.
I did not go that far.
But I was sitting, you know, next to only Arsenal fans. And basically, Spurs scored first. And I've been like, okay, I can't be like full cheering, you know. I can maybe do a little bit of a fist bump close to my body. When I'm there, and there was a couple of guys sitting in the Arsenal section that just fucking went straight up cheered, and the whole audience, like, I'm telling you, they're throwing at them. Security comes, like, half arrests them, you know, get the fuck out.
Bro, you've got to have the biggest. To be doing that, like, you've either got to be Arnie in his prime, like, you can take on every man, or I don't know, Jean-Claude Van Damme or someone like that, or just be a complete nutter.
Yeah,
because
but
you're not gonna win.
I had to fake it a little bit, so, like, Arsenal got a corner, I'm like,
well,
like, applauded when nothing good happened, you know. So yeah, I was a little bit of an imposter there.
You've had a good time. I've been so, bro, mine's been so up and down. I'd say, went to HLTV Awards, you know, my dog was sick. We were trying to make sure she was okay. We take her everywhere with us. And she sadly passed away in Denmark. Like, she was in a vet in Ukraine. She was in a vet in Denmark. No one could find out what was wrong with her. Like, this this virus she picked up, this stomach thing. And she's not old, she's only 8. So yeah, we had to bury her. She buried her in a lovely place in Denmark, and Blast helped us organize and sort everything out, which obviously they didn't have to do. That was really nice. But yeah, we put a nice place down for her. But obviously, it's just sad. For me, I don't know about other people, for me, pets are like family, man. It's like real, I don't care. It doesn't matter if it's a pet or a human, it's the same thing. So that was sucky. But then also, obviously, the good thing, HLTV Awards actually won the award. Thank you, everyone who voted.
Yeah.
And then what else did we do? And then all the Blast Bounty. And then now I'm here in Katowice. And now we're about to film episode 2. Dude, 20 days? I feel like I've been on the road for 2 months. I feel like this has been a draining one with like the dog and just the event. And also, this is for everyone to know, my voice is cooked right now. Like, I don't think I'm
ill. It's not only the mic.
No, yeah. By the way, this is hilarious. So DevWalk got a microphone upgrade and I am on wireless tech. Thank you, by the way, Asun, who hooked me up. But yeah, I need to, I guess, upgrade the actual microphone part or get the standalone microphone. But you're brand new. You're fresh. You got the same as me.
Yeah. Obviously Beacon, they reached out and got me this sick microphone. I'll show it a little bit.
So they wanted us to match, and now I don't match. I love this. This is actually brilliant.
And I even have this like kind of, I don't know what to call it, like a mixer thing screen right next to me.
You've never had anything like this,
have you? Never. This is like the coolest thing. I'm just playing around with it all the time. And it's honestly, it's one of those things like when you get it, like how did I survive without it? Because it's, I'm sitting there, I'm in game, playing Counter-Strike or whatever.
Yeah, I can
lower music specifically, browsers, voice programs, everything, and just raise the game. I'm in the middle of a clutch. I just screw my game sound up a little bit.
You just do a little extra 10%.
Yeah. Hear all the steps. So you're cooking. So it's good. I'm really enjoying it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, because I'm saying thank you to them because obviously I was using it and then they're just like, yeah, let's make you two match. I'm thinking, cool, we only did first episode. Not a sponsor, just gave it to us. We should put it out there before someone says like we're just plugging things. But no, we don't have any sponsors. We're just doing our thing. We got a lot to cover, so let's get into it. Let me get the date and time correct. This is all about Counter-Strike Episode 2. We finally got here. It is the 28th of January, 2025, and it is 8:46 p.m. as we start to be filming this. We had a little chat of everything before at the beginning. And now we got to get into things. So let me have a look at where we want to start with this, because I guess HLTV Awards makes sense as our beginning part. It was the start of the year for everyone. I'll say it from my perspective. I went the last year as well. I went 2023. This year was even better. Still in service, still in the same place. But you could just see like the extra levels they added on to it. They gave us a finalist coin, which is like last year I was a finalist for my category for talent of the year. And if you didn't win, you just didn't get anything. This time they give you like a little thing that says you were a finalist of this year. Yeah, you made top 3. That's a nice little addition. It seemed like the production quality had been upgraded as well. We had the first ever Hall of Fame. I got to see Potty and Spawn, who I've not seen in probably about, I think, three years I've not seen these guys. I think I last saw them at the Stockholm Major. So it was amazing to sit with them. I think it was so well done. And honestly, it's just for Counter-Strike, but it's the best award show there is in esports right now. Like the way it's done, how it's put together.
It looked sick. I was even, scouting. Come, I had to do the London game there. But next year I promise I will come. But I did see on Instagram as well, a lot of people were posting, like they were shooting like Counter-Strike weapons at a shooting range. Like and stuff like that. That was super cool.
Yeah, so the last year there was like paddle and some other stuff that was involved that you could do before. This time I didn't come early enough. It's like I try to save time traveling, right? But this year they added an extra element to it. Oni was there doing bowling and shooting with the real guns, like you said, in Counter-Strike guns. It was actually awesome to see that everything could just leveled up a little bit in there. I don't think we need to touch on any kind of the winners in there overall of like what there was. I think event of the year, Perfect World, Shanghai Major. I said Shanghai or Copenhagen. Yeah. Shanghai was first, Copenhagen was second. I think Cologne probably had the better final out of all of these ones. Obviously, it was a best of five. It was a crazy one between Vitality and Na'Vi. Donk winning player of the year. Not really a surprise at all.
Not at all.
Surprise in any way. No. Do you know what? I'll say one thing about me winning talent of the year. The amount of people that were like, how does he win? No one likes him. It's like, bro, I literally tweeted for my fans, vote for me because it's community voted. I tweeted for the Brazilian audience because I've got a lot of Brazilian followers because those guys seem to love me. And I asked them to vote for me and it worked out. You know, that's just the way it goes. If I'm going to be in for something, I'm going to try and win it. So I'm pretty happy.
I mean, they have the different categories for a different reason, you know. Talent of a year makes sense that it's not a, you know, like a panel or something.
It'd be a bit weird for a panel to do it, right? Because there's just too much bias to be in with that by far.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? So
it's actually funny, though, because I feel like when we do Talent of the Year, like I think it should next time when we maybe in future years, it should be broken down because like hosts, commentators, analysts, interviewers, all of us are in it, you know, the whole thing. So maybe
it
probably
should be like play by play by year, you know, color caster of the year and stuff. Because
they're like host interviewer together or something. Because
it's a little bit weird, yeah.
Yeah. It's nice that HLTV do that and like give us a chance to have something like that because there's nothing else at all like it. But I would just say the HLTV Awards, they're actually killing it in how they do it. Donk obviously is absolutely just a madman. Donk right now is still putting up crazy numbers. We'll come on to that a little bit later on. But he had so much aura on that stage. Did you see him? He's like, hey, guys, I'm here again. I think it's my third time on stage now.
Third time on stage.
Oh, dude. And I think like he was 17, then he's just 18 now, and he's got all that aura, all that confidence. I do you know what? I respect it because he's learning so fast and yet he's still got that carefree attitude, a lot of confidence with it as well. Like we've never had a player like him, man. And it's just the beginning, but it's really cool. I'll touch on the Hall of Fame thing. That Hall of Fame thing was awesome. Obviously it was heavily Swedish, so you're probably smiling the whole way through on that. But I feel like that was a good balance.
I think it's definitely, you know, Swedes were the best back in the days. There's definitely a few like Norwegians, Danish players that I could definitely see joining that crew, even a couple of Americans. So, and Brazilian by that. But Sweden were dominant. We've obviously dropped off in the later parts of the year. You know, we have even Swedish orgs switching from being all Swedish to more internationally based with no Swedish players in it.
Which is kind of crazy. Very kind of crazy. I would say I like the idea, though, that it's had a balance. And then next year, obviously, I would expect maybe Spawn, Element. You mentioned Norwegian, right? So Element probably have to be in there. Then maybe a couple of the others from the beginning of Source into CSGO as well. Just keep it varying, keep it going. But it's just the very beginning of it, right? And we've never had a Hall of Fame that stuck around. So this is for the future and for the long term. And I'm really happy to see it. All right.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at Rostermania because we spent so much time on this. And we even after we finished the show, mate, there was so many more Rostermania moments happening. Let's look at this one because you mentioned like Swedish organizations moving away from Swedish players. The new NIP. Now, even though it's not what people were maybe expecting this team would have in them, obviously, we mentioned Rez went to Gamer Legion. This team's probably the best NIP on paper that you could have hoped and thought of for many years. And also, it's one that has to now do it with not being in the partner leagues, you know? So,
yeah.
I kind of like it, man.
I can say like straight off, I think the players, they're good, but I'm not sure, even sure they're playing with a stand-in, right? Because they want to keep some, I'm not really sure how it all is, but I'm pretty sure this Aradose hasn't even played.
Oh, really?
Playing with Let me just quickly check on the website, but because I wanted to check some of the games previously.
Well, I'll say when you're checking that, it's like Snappy, obviously. So
they've been
Falcons
playing with Jax as a stand-in.
Okay, so Jax was standing in. Oh, damn.
Yeah. So he has like kind of a short-term contract with NIP to stand in until a certain point. I'm not really sure how long that is, but
wait, he's turned into the super stand-in. He has become the super stand-in for teams, man. Vitality now helping out this new NIP lineup. Obviously, Wrinkle for me, still the star offer of the future. I just hope he doesn't get pinned down in many bad NIP rosters and then can't live up for his potential. I hope he has a roster he can grow with. Shush, I think everyone knows what this guy can do.
He's insane.
Snappy now has a chance to redeem himself because Falcons, like, we joke about his time does not count, but I don't think his time counts on Falcons because he did so good with that Ends team. Then he went to Falcons, was supposed to be so good. But it was like, definitely seems to be a clash on how he's supposed to be leading and how he likes to lead and how Zonic wants. And then we end up with it not working out. Now, Ujerks and Aradosse, they're like very good individual players, but let's see how they do on an international team. And obviously, Exister's got to try and make all of this work. And you said even Aradosse is not playing yet. So I think it's an exciting team, but mate, they're going to have to fight so hard for these points.
Yeah.
Because they won't be getting invites.
And hopefully, you know, they don't have this kind of period because, I mean, we know in the past, like past 5 years probably, NIP been struggling. They put stand-ins in and then they have to kind of reinvent. And remember when I was talking with Hampus about that, it was so hard to kind of re-go through everything they've done in progress to kind of like, they just get put back a month because they have to teach the new guy to be comfortable on the new strats situations because you can't just cram in 50 strats into a brain in a day, you know? That's not really how it works. So I hope they do end up having him around, make sure that he's there for all the practice. Might not even be easy for him not playing and just watching. Hopefully they get into a system where he can just slot right back into it when they start with him again.
It's also funny, right, looking down their bench player list. Mistem, Alex, Maxter, and Config. Config, like, I don't know where he can go or what he's going to do next, but I still think as an individual raw player, he can be so good. But it's like rosters have already been found. People already have teams. But they basically almost have a full roster in bench players. Like, you can make a NIP point 2.0.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild. It is kind of wild.
And I know there's at least been in, like, the Swedish scene, and there's been a couple of tweets from, like, old NIP player Draken about, like, how disappointed and they've basically just skipped the Swedish scene and said there's no talent there and stuff like that. So they've kind of outraged the Swedish community a little bit.
Okay, but let me ask you as a Swede then, because do you see Draken's tweet as one of frustration because he was on that Johnny Spees team and they didn't get picked up? Or is he speaking like how the Swedish scene feels?
I mean, I think his tweet is more in his own frustration than it is, you know, the entirety of the Swedish scene's views. But I do still think there's a point and there are going to be people that agree with him. I'll even read you the tweet if you want.
It's let's go. Let's bring it up.
Dear NIP, it's truly crazy how you've been under construction for the past 7 years without any progress, still stomping your head against the wall to get this mediocre international lineup to work. Sure, you have good players, but there are so much more fundamentals to Counter-Strike. Especially when you don't have great players, these international concepts have made you crazy. And Fred speaks publicly, but there are so few Swedish talents, I beg to differ, and I will show you. You had a chance to pick me up at Johnny Spears' lineup, and you could have kept rest. We barely practiced and I coached on 50% of the time, and look where that got us. Anyways, had to let off some steam, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, at least he admitted he's letting off some steam. But I'll say, the under construction thing has been a meme. Like, NIP has fumbled so many players' careers and so many rosters, it's wild. Like, I like some of the people I've met at NIP, but sometimes I look at what they've done with the CS team and think, you're kidding me. Like, Hedrick ended up not being utilized correctly. They dropped Alexi when they had him. Like, they have had many mediocre rosters, but I would say out of all the rosters they've had in this under construction, this one, at least on paper, looks better than all the rest.
Yeah. But I'll also say, you know, like, if NIP weren't in the partner leagues during that time, they would have been nowhere near the ranking they were. Not a single chance they would be qualifying for tournaments during those times. They are even overvalued at this point as we look at it, even though we are, you know, kind of bashing them during that time.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And it, obviously, if this team doesn't do well, right, or doesn't make enough points, how long are you going to pay these players good money if you've got no shot at the major or no chance of qualifying for anything big? It's not going to last so long,
is it? It's definitely a little bit of an uphill battle for them right now. They need to kind of get into that, you know, fight for those spots with Heroic and other teams that are up and coming. So they look decent so far, but they haven't really met anything notable on the server yet. But they've been picking up some stable wins at least.
Then we've also got onto your X team again, because we touched on Fear getting signed for Fnatic, which obviously we all agree was a huge signing. Burmalov comes in now, but I'm just going to say this. Obviously, we got to see Burmalov, and it was just one series, and it was just against Spirit. But I'm like, you didn't get Jambo. I asked Fear on the interview, like, I thought Jambo would come with you, you know? Take your boy with you. You've played on many teams with him. We saw how good he can be. And Jambo still sits on passion, by the way, for this year, so far at least. And I'm not going to say Burmalov's any bad, but Fear said it's not just his decision, right? He has input, but obviously Fnatic team and coaching staff and everyone, they get to make a choice in this. And they go and take a Mal's NXT player. Yes, Mal's NXT has done pretty good at getting some academy players out and into Tier 1 and made good choices. But I'm like, Jambo was proven to do good. And you pass up on him. So I still don't think this is like the final piece. Obviously, I'm basing this off one game where they lost to Spirit. Spirit won the whole tournament, you know? So like I can't throw them under the bus for it.
Crushed in that game. They did play decently close on Train, but you know, Train is so random right now until the meta kind of solidifies. So there's, even if like a really bad team would beat Spirit on it, I wouldn't take that much away from Spirit at that point. But they've lost also to Amkal recently online 2-0, which is lineup is... I don't really know anything about.
Just a meh team. Nothing too special, nothing to shout and scream about. But they're gonna need some time. I think like some of the pieces here are good. I know we spoke about it last time, but it's like Crims might not have too much time left on playing for Fnatic, depending on what he wants to do. I think he still can add a lot to that team, but obviously at some point he's not going to survive a roster change. And Burmalov, I just want to see him be able to output more on the lower down teams when they are fighting up against them to prove me wrong. Because just for me, Jambo was right there. You should have been able to take him. You should have gone for him.
Yeah, they probably, I mean, I don't know how expensive Jambo would have been, but probably pretty decently expensive.
Yeah.
So they probably took a cheaper option to kind of, okay, let's see where we go with this.
Balance.
And not, that's what I suspect. I don't know at all.
The other crazy one, by the way, this is the next one. This is one of our last roster ones. This doesn't make any sense. When this dropped, we were at Blast Bounty. Mal's benched Shuhei, and obviously there's a lot of drama to come out of this, and I'm just going to give my thoughts and opinion as someone who knows these guys. And I think I said it before, I was there the first LAN event that this Mal's NXT original roster with Shuhei on that Cyclone put together, when it was Shuhei, JDC, Torji, Zershan, and then the other guy that didn't go anywhere afterwards. I think it was the other Polish guy. I can't remember. But anyway, all that. I was in their practice room when they were all excited and happy to be there. And then they just drop before Katowice after playing. And who did Mal's even lose to make this change happen? BetBoom team, wasn't it? It was Bet Boom team they lost to. And they say, we are announcing updates to our Counter-Strike roster effective immediately. Kamil Shuhei, sorry Shuhei, I can't say your surname, I'm not going to butcher that, will be stepping into an inactive role as a result of differing visions for the team's direction. Brolan has been appointed as the new in-game leader. Additionally, Adam Torzi and Zershan Berman will undertake expanded responsibilities within the team. And then Zelex, XLX, from Mao's NXT will serve as a stand-in for the upcoming IEM Katowice tournament. Dude, why would you not just go with Shuhei for this event? there's so much, like, first of all...
There's a lot of things in this that just doesn't make sense. First, like, Brolan all of a sudden becomes an in-game leader. That doesn't make sense to me. You know...
He's got the most experience...
that's all I got
for you, man. He's got the most experience.
I feel like it's a huge risk because there was even tweets about it that they might have considered dropping Brolan. I saw Nell tweet about that there were discussions beforehand to drop either Shui or Brolan, and so they obviously must have had difference of opinion, if I'm kind of recreating this right in my head. And then Brolan took over, and I still think it's a huge gamble, because I don't know, he might have matured a lot, but I've always seen Brolan as kind of like emotional guy. He needs to get into his flow of the game
him as a natural leader.
I don't either, and that's not to disrespect Brolan, you know, it's a tough thing to do.
No, but some people have it or not, right? Some people have that. Like, I can see some players and I can feel like later in your career you will be a great in-game leader. Yeah, like you have that ability to be able to captain people. But some people are just naturally, like, some of the best players in the world, you never want them as a leader. That's just, you never want them as an IGL. Doesn't matter what experience, what they've done, it's not a possibility. But the crazy thing is, right, so after this happens, they both, like, so Mao's make that tweet, Shuhei makes his own tweet, and he says, as of today, I'm no longer a part of Mao's active roster due to clashing visions. This decision will allow both sides to continue seeking success in their own ways. Thank you to everyone that I had the pleasure to work with. Good luck. And that's it. Now, cool, everything's fine. Then, this is where the drama starts, and it just gets more weird, and I honestly hate this, because Shuhei did a stream. The stream VOD has now been deleted. There were clips that people took where he was supposedly saying about teammates. Yeah. Now, it's very hard, if you didn't watch the stream live, to know what it was, because you don't get the full picture. So I only saw the clips, for example.
Yeah.
And he said things that obviously would look really bad to the Mao's team, like people not coming to practice or not having conversation, you know, like not talking together.
As it was translated, as I understood it, it was basically people played prac and get just spread out. They wouldn't talk to each other, barely answer messages sent to them.
Only from girlfriends, right, and stuff like that.
Yeah, they would like mute entire like team conversations and stuff like this, like terrible.
But that's
stuff.
Crazy, because the whole thing about this team since NXT to now was like, Mao's are together. They're one big, happy, friendly family. Yeah. And bro, I'll tell you this. They looked like it. In like, I didn't see them behind closed doors, but at events, you know, joking around with each other. When they're getting ready and set up and stuff, they are like, seriously, we're happy and chilling together, laughing, joking. It looked like they had me fooled, if that's not the truth.
Yeah.
I definitely believe that they were all friends. And this is the bit, though, where, okay, he might have said it angry. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not true. What I don't like is that he then rewrites, like, it's a post, right? It's a post that looks like it comes from a Google document. Anyone who's used Google documents can see this is from a Google document. And this is where I think he did not write this. I'm just going to say this now. I would like to clarify the situation regarding a clip that was taken out of context and has been circulating on social media since yesterday. The clip was cut in such a way and at such time to manipulate the audience into thinking that it refers to my departure from Mouse. I want to make it clear, dash, this is completely untrue. I'm sorry. Shuhei's a smart
This is like lawyer
guy,
talk. This is like lawyer. We need to release a statement
like
now.
He don't write like this, brother. I don't write like this. Yeah? And then it goes, in addition, the clip is from a stream from 9 days ago and refers to a completely different topic. My unbanning on Face It while playing matchmaking with friends. What? What? Because you deleted the VOD of the... I don't even know. And this says...
I mean, I was reading the original Reddit thread, and all the Polish guys were like saying, this is what he's saying, you know? He's talking about the team, you know? That was essentially what the whole thread was about. I don't speak. I can't confirm it. But...
No, that's the problem.
When you see that the majority, no one is like arguing like, no, that's
no
not
No one's trying to say,
meant,
no,
or,
this isn't correct. Yeah.
So and you kind of lean towards that side.
I don't see anything wrong with someone not using their phone in their free time, especially since my former teammates and I used to spend practically every day together. We had a really good atmosphere in the team. We enjoyed talking to each other on and off the server about anything in life. At the end of the day, they are like a second family to me. There was never a situation where I felt ignored or left out in our environment. I am, and I will be on good terms with my friends. The surfacing clips is completely out of context and is not relevant to me being moved to the inactive roster. It was all said in an exaggerated, joking matter. So this bottom part, contradicts the part that says it was from a clip 9 days ago.
Yeah.
Do you understand that? So, I'm sorry. I wish I knew the truth. I wish I could find out. By the way, I messaged Camille. He read the message but didn't reply. It's probably the shit lot he's got to go through. But I've always been on good terms with him. But it's like, even if the clips are taken out of context, even if the clips are not about Mouse, this was not written by him. This does not look like a tweet made by him, something written by him. This is a document you've been sent and told you must post this now if you want to have your salary.
Yeah, it sounds like someone just came in like, you need to fix this now. And, you know, we prepared something for you. You need to send this out. Clarify it for him.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, let me read down some of the comments on here. They were like, someone goes, they were like a second family to me. Bench right before your home soil S tier event. It's kind of true. It's almost a mandatory PR post. Yeah, it's. By the way, I'll just say this though. I don't think the Brolan in-game leading is going to work out. I would love if he can prove me wrong, but we both just set our points on him.
I think it's like one of these things, like if they do really good the first second event, it will work for 3 months, and I swear to you, being an in-game leader is a lot harder than people think, and it will drain people out, and I just don't see, you know, that kind of, you know, like, let's talk about even Major, the Eternal Fire in-game leader, right?
He's sitting up
before a game, studying until 5 in the morning, sleeps 3 hours, plays the game, crushes it, and, you know, goes back and do the same thing.
Has two kids, by the way. Yeah.
I don't see Brolan being that guy, you know? Like, I'm not sure he will sacrifice both his own mental health to the other team and even being able to kind of take that and still be able to perform. I think there's
And there's a thing here as well, which then, because obviously we're not even close to done with this topic, right? But like, you've done it before, Katowice, so something really crazy happened to make you have a knee-jerk reaction like this, because you can't even have Sphinx in. So this is where the Sphinx conversation comes in. We said, where the hell is Sphinx going to go? The thought
was...
Because
it wasn't planned.
No, the thought was Brolan was going to go, from what you said, right? And Sphinx was going to come in for him. And then it would have been that roster. But instead, they've removed Shuhei, brought in Sunny in-game leader, Sphinx has come in. Now, Sphinx definitely is a great player to add to the team. Major winner, lots of experience. a very capable player. He was replaced only by Rops, right? So this is a great pickup for Mouse. But like, it throws everything else that you have into disarray. And oh, like, it's not a positive move now. It's not a great move for anyone unless they can really pull this out of the bag. They obviously said Chorzy and Zershin will have extra responsibilities, but
never ends up being that good. I'll even reference like an old situation, you know, like when Fnatic cut Pronax, right? Everyone remembers Dennis comes in, right? It was Dennis, right? I'm pretty sure. And they just play this like massive, you know, they have aim stars, deluxe everywhere. And they win like the first 7 or 8 events. I'm pretty sure they did. But the point I'm trying to make is everything that you've done with the previous in-game leader is still there. It's over time system. It gets lost. It gets lost over time because you're adding new things, you're replacing the old system, and over time they don't even know why they're doing it. It might be like you've added too much and it doesn't make sense because someone else has kind of thought this out and created it. And you know, you kind of lose your identity. And that can be very dangerous. So I expect them to do fine, run the same thing for 1, 2, 3 events. And then I'm expecting it to kind of mellow out and kind of get worse and worse over time.
So my thing is that maybe 2, 3 months, like you said, Mouse go, wait, we made a huge mistake. And they go,
yeah.
Come back, please, Shuhei. And Brolin gets kicked. Shuhei's back in. Something's resolved, right? Or if I'm someone like maybe G2 or Liquid right now, I say, Shuhei's available. Maybe we can try and make a bid for him and have him for after the Austin Major. Yeah? Because nothing bad about Twist being an in-game leader, but I much preferred him when he wasn't. The T-sides are still not that great. You could quite easily remove, I don't know, maybe JKS. JKS, just throwing your name out there. And put Twist out of the IGL role, put Shuhei in. That'd be pretty cool. For G2, Snacks out, Shuhei in, Polish for Polish.
I think that would be actually pretty insane.
How huge would that be? How huge would that be, bro? Those are two roster moves, which are definitely on the cards. So if anything, Shuhei's probably going to win big here no matter what. Either Mouse will come back to him, or someone like a Liquid or a G2 will say, come on, come to us.
Or he gets back into the Mouse lineup, but, you know, gets more authority because he's not just going to, you know, okay, I'll come back. You know, I think he's going to be like, okay, but then it needs to be my way, you know.
Yeah, follow what I'm saying. Let's do it this way.
Yeah.
Because every in-game leader should, like, obviously listen to his teammates in some way, but this difference is in vision is like it got you this far and have done pretty good. I don't think the vision was the problem if you look at Mouse's results, you know. Like you just needed to tweak some things and continue to grow on stages like they were doing. They got a second place at Rio, right?
They were such a young team, you know, as well. They had so many years. And
Brolin is the
position,
most experienced person on that team, remember.
And he's 22.
Yeah, exactly.
They have a long career ahead of them, and they're not at their peak.
No,
you know, it's a shame it came to this. Honestly, even though I like Sphinx, I think he's a good guy. I always enjoy talking to him, and then he's an amazing player.
Well,
really
wait a second.
Out the same
you
way
said,
in Vitality.
You said Sphinx, right? Is a good guy. Always loved
every time I met him, I've enjoyed, you know, talking to him, had fun with him. So
had fun with him.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably get to elaborate. Madden, you know, this is like ends time, snappy, you know, like meeting them, having a few drinks at events, you know.
Yeah. Okay, I'm with you. So my thing though is, remember the whole like Sphinx and Mezzy rumors. I don't know. I think the rumors was like that those two didn't get on. And then in other interviews I saw since this Sphinx has gone. So remember, Sphinx was going to leave before Cologne, supposedly, or after Cologne. Yeah. I've just watched the beginning of the Field of View that ESL put out, which is showing the Cologne Grand Final Vitality versus Na'Vi, all the voice comms put in with the game footage. Incredible content that ESL does, by the way. Like, this is like Netflix level content put out for free on YouTube. And one of the bits Flame says on there in the interviews is like, oh, we were probably going to make a roster change if we didn't do well, you know, at Cologne, like at least playoffs or something, because obviously they'd had not such a good year up until that point in 2024. Yeah. Then they go on to win Cologne, so Spinx ends up staying, right? He stays for a bit longer. But I think it was KRL or someone who said that, like, Spinx would go, and then the rumors were that he wasn't getting on with someone. I asked Mezzi, because I'm trying to be more like, find out things in these interviews that we can say publicly. I asked Mezzi on the interview in Blast Bounty, and he was like, no, there wasn't any problems there. He just came out of it. Then literally after I did that interview, before the interview was played, before the interview was played on broadcast, someone had spoken to Spinx and obviously told him it had been asked. So I'm guessing like a Vitality management. And then I saw Spinx's tweet, and this is what's fucking crazy. Is like, I don't expect people to shit on each other, but also just be honest, because he tweets literally before the interview's gone out anyway. He says, usually I don't comment on rumors, but I want to clarify this. I never had a problem with Mezzi. I love this guy outside and inside the server, and it was always a pleasure. Now, for me, I've never seen Spinx in any capacity be like a toxic teammate or against someone. I could agree, not just those players, but like Spinx and someone else could easily disagree on maybe a vision of the game or a way they want to play CS or how you should play CS, you know? But I don't think they have a problem outside of it. But everything, like what Apex has said in interviews, what other players have like alluded to, is there was a problem. So if people don't want these rumors to happen, players are so worried about saying things, but sometimes you should just say like, yeah, we couldn't agree on this.
Clarify, you know? It so that people don't sit like us two right now and guesswork the entire situations.
Exactly. Like,
even if it is like, I just did not mesh well with this player in game.
You know, that's completely fine. But I will say, because I'll defend the players here, I feel like we've gone so far away from players being able to say that, because some of the community, and we are, both of us here are people who love this game, some of the community are such horrible people that if he said that, forever they'd be like, you're the problem, you're so shit, hell, I hate you. And you know, like, because we have these like horrible, horrible, disgusting people sometimes who just don't let off it, but like, for a show, for what we see in real sports, for what you see in football teams or like hockey teams, whatever, a bit of that honesty and then a bit of community understanding would be nice, because we've gone so far where we might know stuff behind closed doors that I cannot say on this podcast, I cannot say on a broadcast, but players now, we've even heard that there was definitely some sort of a problem within this Vitality team, but no one's saying what it is or who it is. So now we're all just guessing. We need a bit more than this, because it felt too weird that I did the interview with Mezzi and then before the interview made it out in public, Spinx made a tweet.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy. That's like how much they're all trying to climb to save face on what this is. And also, Vitality, obviously, Zyru, Apex, Matt the analyst, and Xtaz the coach, they're all French, yeah? And it's a French organization. KRL is also French. KRL seems to get every leak that happens within Vitality. If it's not some of the players, which I don't think it would be the players, I don't even think it would be Xtaz or Matt, but someone in Vitality is definitely leaking all your problems and all your shit everywhere. It's like, you guys need to plug that hole, you know? Unless you're leaking it yourselves, like you're purposely doing it and this is some like PR strategy that you want to have out here, it's not good that these leaks keep coming out and it's only around like the French media it comes out in. Because it's not even like HLTV never break it first. It's always him.
Yeah.
And it's like, at least Overdrive, everyone knows, right? He did stuff for Spirit and does stuff for Spirit Academy, and he just leaks out the stuff he knows from there and says it publicly. We're like getting it passed on third information, and yeah, it's so messy.
Half translated them.
Yeah, we're just lost. Because by the way, respect the KRL in this sense. Like, I even said to him, some of the rumors you say, I just don't believe. And I think it was the Spinx one of them. And then he said, like, trust me, I'm 100% right, blah, blah, blah. And we, like, there was a back and forth conversation. And he was right in the end, but it was like, I'm thinking, damn, you're that accurate on these guys all the time. You must have a super source.
How long ago was that? That you had that discussion, you did, talking about this leak, right? When did he leak
this,
that?
So he said that basically Spinks was supposed to go after Cologne, but obviously it didn't happen because they went on to win Cologne. That's where that first started.
That's still a long time, man.
But then, so that means Spinks, I think Spinks was then allowed to seek other options. They said like, okay, if you're not happy, you can look. And then because they won Cologne, I guess he stayed, you know, and that's how it all worked out.
Yeah.
But this is another thing. Some teams and orgs should just maybe like publish your own videos of saying what happened. We had this problem. X, Y, Z happened. This happened, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
A bit of transparency would go a long way. How many football teams do you see afterwards say like, oh, I hated my gaffer here. I didn't like this guy, blah, 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 you know? All the time. They won't say it when they're on the same team, but afterwards they'll come out and you don't have to say you hate them. Just say, this didn't work. I wasn't happy with this. I didn't like this kind of way, you know? But I think that's all for roster moves that we've got, right? We've touched on all the roster moves.
Yeah, yeah. But is this a crazy one? Shuey benched. Hopefully someone like G2 comes in and picks him up.
Would you prefer G2 over Liquid?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we'll get into it. We're going to Blast Bounty right now, right? So
we'll probably talk about it
a little bit more.
All right, so moving on to our next bit. We had a little internet crash because hotel Wi-Fi is not fun, but we're trying to make this work no matter what, Devil Walk. It's the Blast Bounty review. We touched on it coming into this. Obviously, when I'm looking at Blast Bounty, I'm going to just say unique format, became very exciting. Yes, teams didn't go all in, but we got to see some upsets and how that would affect things because it was single elimination. We got to see some teams that maybe people didn't expect do pretty well, better than expected. Some teams used the format to their advantage in picking teams who made roster changes as well. I don't know, man. For me, being a part of it, this was the best way to start a season we've had in years because normally we start with the spring groups, fall groups, which is great. Like, it's good Counter-Strike. But a team get like 2 or 3 chances to play a game to qualify for the spring final, which is like in 3 months away from now. So it's like, this means like everything matters because it's all leading into the VRS points and for the major. This was super hype, to be fair.
No, I thought it was a great tournament. I also kind of liked the system where, you know, you could kind of be that underdog being, I'm going to go big or go home. You had those opportunities to choose, you know, some really, really strong teams. Some of them did, some didn't, and took a little bit more of a safe route. But I think all in all, I thought it was going to be a very jokey kind of tournament from the get-go. But honestly, I liked the format. I thought it actually worked pretty well. It's a bit confusing still, you know, not getting used to it. Like, you know, you're checking results and everything, like, round 32, you know, there's a lot of teams playing in the online phase, so it's maybe a little bit difficult to follow everything, but at the same time, you know, I enjoyed the event, and I'm looking forward to watching it again.
Yeah, I think like there's some adjustments needed. For example, it's obviously not great for some teams where they have to only have a few hours to prepare if they're picked, right? And then straight in for the games the next day. I personally, like, if I'm a team, I'd ask for a day in between. So when the draft is done, then you have a day and then a day to get ready. But obviously the most wanted teams, the ones who are the favorites in the seed, they should be ready and prepared for that. I love the fact that, like, if you beat a seed, you take the team seed from them. I felt like the best draft we did was when there was the more teams in there, and the first one with all the teams when they were next to me was cool. But the last draft we did for the playoff stage, it was kind of pointless. Like, teams were there and we were like, okay, this happened. You know, like, because as soon as Eternal Fire made their pick, the other matchup was confirmed for the semifinals. And then we just knew what was happening, you know? So that kind of didn't work out in like being so wow or so crazy with it. But I think the beauty of this all is that Blast know there is still things they can change going into the next season of it later this year. And we go again. And it had a lot of positives in terms of entertainment. Also, by the way, the most viewed game of the whole tournament, I think, still to this day, was the Imperial female going up against Na'Vi. And that happened in stage one. Yeah, because obviously Na'Vi's a huge name. Imperial female have a Brazilian fan base from, obviously, the organizations from Brazil. But then also, they are the best ever female team to ever do it, you know? So
all the haters just tuned in and like, we're going to watch them get crushed. And they actually played pretty well. Full respect to them because, yeah.
One or two swing rounds and they could have taken them out from Na'Vi. Definitely. Yeah. That was impressive. You have to give them their respect in that. A lot of tweets from people. I think I saw one from Carrigan, JL, Twist. I think a lot of people gave them respect they deserve as well. And Zaz, when she did the interview with us on the desk, she said to me about how they don't normally get to practice against male like tier one teams, and they obviously love the opportunity for it. Remember, Zaz has been doing this for years and years, so like to be able to do this now and have a chance of that is damn impressive. They'll obviously be at Katowice as well, but obviously they didn't win against Na'Vi. There's a few highlight moments and clips from it, but I think it was more of what people were kind of expecting with it. Who in the first stage and in the round of 32 was like your biggest surprise in terms of result they pulled off?
I'd probably say BetBoom in that regard, because they beat Mouse, pretty hype Mouse coming into it. We obviously saw what happened after that, something Mouse did not expect either.
Nope.
To put it lightly. So, I mean, they could have beaten them 2-0 even, and it became a 2-1. But yeah, BetBoom beating Mouse was a big shock.
And dude, the thing is, do you know what I like about this BetBoom team is we obviously saw Magna Jez, right, when he was playing in the Duo Cup. So it was like Magna Jez, then he's got Axile, and now Boomich leading him. Like, they look monstrous. If you've got Axile and Magna Jez doing work for you from the beginning, then you've already got like a solid team. And then Zorte is an AWPer. He might have not shined the brightest, but I still think he's an AWPer that a lot of people have spoke about for a long time within the CIS scene. I think the only weak link on that team right now is Siren. He obviously, he just sometimes, I just feel like he's kind of lost in rounds, or you just can't rely on him to hold something. But the fact they could take down Mouse 2-1, and even the first map was on that crazy Dust 2 overtime, it's like, damn, okay, now we're really talking.
It's really nice to see Axile kind of getting back to, like when he in CSGO, when he was in Cloud9 or, you know, even Gambit, which I remember, like he was a beast. And the way he played Counter-Strike, just he was a little bit of a unique player because he would be very turrety. Like he would just stand somewhere, shoot people in the head or get pop flashed in and just tap people down. Incredibly like dangerous player to even, like I remember Overpass, he was a beast on. Anyways, fun to see him kind of getting a little bit back to his old ways of shooting hard, because he's been one of these guys that's kind of been left out from the kind of big transfers, with especially since Shiro kind of departed for that spirit move. So it's good to see him kind of back in form.
Yeah, and a lot of people were saying, like, I see analysts talking about, oh, Axile was, like, just needing more time or whatever, but it did seem at one point that he might struggle to make it back to where he was. With Boomich as his leader in Cloud9, I thought that was going to be the chance, but this put some faith back in me that, okay, he can find his way back there again for sure. And every one of his teammates, because obviously they had Nafani come stand in when they made it to the round of eight, because obviously they have visa problems for the team, which obviously that sucks. I'll come into that a bit later. But everyone is so positive about Axile, more than what I'd even imagined. Like, so if you can bring him back to that level, I feel like,
we can see really good ratings. It was like 128 against Mouse. Even if we look at the next stage, round 16, like 126 against Furia. So he was like topping the scoreboard for pretty much every game BetBoom was playing.
Yeah, it was really good. What was nice as well, because obviously we spoke about Na'Vi going up against Imperial Female. When they played Astralis, that felt more like the Na'Vi we saw. Yep. Like it was a 2-0 against Astralis, but they looked like, I wouldn't say they had control the whole time. They certainly had to fight for it, but it looked a bit more like the Na'Vi you want to see. Vitality, they won their games, but both they could have easily dropped the map or even dropped the whole series in it. Like, they were not looking the best. Their T sides were specifically not that strong, but I think that maybe just takes some adjusting because of the type of player Rops is. I thought they would struggle more on their CT sides because, like, more players have changed positions there. Like, yeah, Rops, like, Flames obviously disrupts a lot of that.
I think Rops has taken a lot of, like, Flames kind of normal spots. And you could see, but I think Flames actually he was playing pretty well on the new spots, especially when it came to the LAN segment of it. But
give him a small amount of time, and he's young enough and eager enough and more than capable to be adjusted to all of that, you know.
Yeah,
I think in the long term it will work out.
Yeah, and he seems to be just a positive force, just as a person. So
yeah,
I'm sure he will be able to bounce right into the into that.
I got to get your thoughts on G2 though, because there was a moment where we were thinking, like, they almost lost to Bait, and Bait said they picked him because they beat him in practice, you know, and thought that might be a chance. And then who did they play after that? Big, and they almost lost to Big as well. Like, it was a bit more convincing on Big than it was against Bait, but like, yeah. It was a very worrying early sign to G2. And when I asked them about it, they were like, oh, no, it's just online games. We're just getting used to it. Like, nothing to worry about too much. But when you've got Malbs, Munacy, Heavy God's very good in his role, and I'm thinking, those results, I'm just still expecting more from you guys.
Yeah, it's both yes and no. Because I think, you know, Nico as a player compared to, like, Heavy God, if you just switch it up a little bit, not performance-wise, but more on the how they act on the server. I think Heavy God is a little bit more crazy factor into it than Nico is, where it's more consistent, stable. You know, crazy once he gets going, but, you know, I think Heavy God is a little bit more of a wild card in that effect, comparably. But I do have some hope for the lineup, especially I watched Hunter play, and I think Hunter has been a lot better coming into this year than he was. He was struggling before, and he was, you know, down with ratings with snacks, you know, for a while there. And it didn't look good at all. But I feel like he kind of had a resurgence and probably taken a little bit more responsibility, especially in the fragging department. He looked a lot sharper than I've seen him, you know, before this year on the last lineup, I guess.
And we've had to see him be more vocal as well, because the thing I kept touching on in interviews with the guys was, like, Nico had such a voice, so it was always like, snacks Nico, right? And obviously how the mid rounds were called and just how Nico would call his own shots on the CT side. Malbs has also been able to see that and now apply it to his game. Heavy God going into those anchor roles that Malbs had before, this suits Heavy God more, because obviously they were old roles he used to play back on OG. But, like, for Malbs, he's going back into roles where, like, you're now one for one replacing Nico. And Nico is not just obviously a phenomenal player, but, like, the greatest rifler of all time up until the moment, right? Because obviously people now obviously talk so much about Donk. But I feel like there's for Malbs, he's got a lot of little adjustments he needs to do. And he's going to have to try and learn very fast, because the very top players will punish him in ways that Nico's used to and has adapted to, that obviously he hasn't had to deal with when he was doing all the time before on G2.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of growing pains depends on what their approach is, you know. If they're just going to replace Nico one by one, it's going to be tough, obviously. They're all going to have to, like, kind of step up and fill some part of the shoe left by Nico in some sense. And it's not going to be instant, you know. You're losing the consistent top 5-3 player for the past, you know, 8-9 years from the roster. And, you know, I think they're probably going to have to find a little bit of a different way to approach things compared to when they had Nico. So I'm still hopeful, but I don't see them being, like, you know, number two in the world necessarily after watching this.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd say if we look at biggest disappointments for this event, I would say Mouse, obviously no one expected that, and probably Saw, but obviously Saw do have new players coming in there. 3D Max probably in there as well, because they're getting invites because they did so well and they're up on the VRS rankings from the major. and this is a golden opportunity for them. But like, who did they lose to? I forget who Freedom X lost to, but it wasn't a good game. It was not pretty.
I'm also kind of in the Heroic.
Heroic. Yeah, Heroic.
But I'm kind of also like, yeah, I was actually impressed by Heroic. I thought they played some pretty good Counter-Strike throughout. But just to touch a bit on disappointment, what do you think about like FaZe and Liquid? I feel like FaZe kind of dropped the ball a little bit.
Yeah, FaZe had the golden opportunity.
Yeah, expected a little bit more because, I mean, it looked like they were playing a Matey first or Mate. I don't know how to...
M-A-T.
I just said Matey. that's how I see it, you know, computer language. Anyways, but they kind of struggled a little bit against them.
Yeah.
And this is a game where I see like FaZe should be dominant because Elish, he was playing great. I thought he still, you know, performed really well. It's not like all of a sudden Rops is gone and that's why, you know, they're losing games or struggling. So I feel like it's
also
it's,
online phase is not the same as in a big event phase, you know? It's always been the problem, even when they had Robs.
But at the same time, they're going to be in a situation where that might be relevant to step up into these online competitions because of how this year is going to be. So they can't just sit back and relax and not, you know, be on the... I don't know if it's a hype problem or whatever it is, but they have to be a lot sharper online than they currently are to, because then they're going to end up being in this 9th to 16th place or not qualifying to the event by one spot. And you want to see FaZe there. You want to see FaZe in the playoff brackets and potentially, you know, upsetting, because I don't see them as the strongest team right now. I feel like they're on probably one of their weakest paths for a long time. But I think just everyone needs to maybe take one step up and they're going to be there.
If you look on the other side of it, though, the like positive surprises, obviously, BetBoom, we already touched on, that's their pain. Like, they add Davideus and... Maori was calling him the Chilean Elige to us in the green room, but this guy is like a bit older. I think he's 24. This is off memory, but he fits into this team really well. And I can tell you, Snow was one of the most hyped young Brazilian players coming up. He won like rookie Brazilian player because they do like a Brazilian award for all of esports. He won like the Brazilian rookie award for last year, rightly so. This guy is beaming with confidence, plays so well, and something changed. Like, he's playing better with this guy coming into the team. Maybe it's like a positive influence on him or something's changed in the like chemistry within the team, but he only used to perform better online, and then when he got to LAN, you could see him crumble. I would never say it's like crumbling at LAN because he's on LAN, because this guy is like screaming. He's 17, by the way. And he's screaming. Yeah. He's in everyone's face. He's going crazy. Super
classical
kind.
Classical Brazilian
super nice.
Word, you know. Caralho.
Yeah. And he's like, bah, bah, bah. And like, he's so loud. When you speak to him off camera, he's so cool, so chill. And he's really just enjoying it all. But this event, you just saw, he looks like he's had that rookie year and something's changed. And all it's been is one player. But obviously, Big Usera has sacrificed like the roles he used to play. And he's going to be a more supportive element, which he's never had to do. And now they've mixed some things up. But it seems like this could be the magic for Payne to go further than we've ever seen him before. And they've already started to look better in 2024. That I'm keeping a close eye on him when it comes to Katowice, man.
I mean, I was watching them both in the online stages and the offline stages, right? And what I noticed, like, they play pretty slow to start, and they kind of just grind you out and then become really explosive once things, like, a little bit Virtus Plow feeling, you know, like...
Yeah.
Like, it's very quiet, nothing is happening, and then when things happening, it's very aggressive and very chaotic, and, you know, you get these kind of, like, highlight moments where every action is happening at the same time. I really enjoyed it because they, but there was also a time, I think it was against FaZe. I think it was Dust 2. They were leading a lot. They got like, I think they won Pistol or something on Dust 2. Mm-hmm. And they got kind of under control. And then they just started rushing everywhere. And they just lost like 3-4 rounds in a row. And I'm like, what are you doing?
like they wanted to finish too early, yeah.
So I think that might be like a thing they have to kind of cope with, like not speeding up too fast, because they were playing great when they were playing slow. Like they had FaZe's number all the time. I think it pretty much happened on both maps. They kind of took control and then kind of just sped up a little bit too much, try to shock the opponent. And maybe it's not as easy to shock like a tier one team compared to like a top 30, top 40 team.
Yeah.
They're usually ready. They had these preset reactions, you know, kind of computed into their brain, and they know what to do. So, yeah. But it's really fun to watch them. And as you said, Snow definitely was enormous.
Yeah, Snow and Davides, I'm looking at keen eyes for sure. And because of these results, right, we're going to touch on Eternal Fire here as well. So what happens is we get like a two-day break and we go to the LAN finals. All the teams get flown in. We have a media day. So our teams that made it to the top eight was Vitality, Pain, Heroic, BetBoom, G2, Na'Vi, Eternal Fire, and Spirit. And remember, how it goes here is like the seeds get to pick again. So like this is awesome because BetBoom got to pick first. But the problem is they come in with... I'm going to say this as well, right? I'm sorry, BetBoom, because I did like the team you had. But if you have visa problems, you should have given up your spot and just not come. Because it was a waste of everyone's time and everyone's day. They got 13-2 and 13-3. They brought in Nafani and Chiron, and Siren was there with 0.35 rating at the end of that series, but man.
I think it even was like they won Pistol. They converted the rounds and then just lost.
And it's just rough, man. And like BetBoom just picked G2 because like, oh, we think they're the weakest, which most teams still thought G2 was the weakest. You had like G2, Na'Vi, Vitality and Spirit, right? These are the teams around you. And it's like you should have let another team go who could have actually done something better. But obviously then still the core of this team is the main BetBoom, so they need the VRS points and, you know, going to that stage at least. But all the results that mattered were the ones that were done before that. So like, I don't know how to look at this. It made me so unhappy because you surely knew before you were not going to have your visa for these two players. And so then you just gave us...
I understand it from like a viewer's perspective kind of deal. But from a player's perspective, I still think they're probably like, fuck yeah, we got into this tournament. Let's try to just make something happen, right? Like, even if it's like this smaller shot, if I was a player, I'd probably still take that opportunity, right? So I understand the players, you know, you just want to play the big teams,
you get it
especially
more
on a big tournament.
Yeah. Payne then picked into Na'Vi, and actually that was probably one of the games of the whole tournament, man. Like, Payne made Na'Vi sweat. They made Na'Vi sweat. Yeah. It was in their hands.
I think they had 6-0 up on the T side.
It was, I'll say this, it was one of these games where you just wonder, like, how was this the major winning Na'Vi? How was this the same team? You even had Imma, who's playing brilliant to start off
beasting
the season. Wonderful. New haircut, new style. Bro, I'm telling you, let me just give you this theory. So Wonderful has the longer hairs, get it cut down, gets a perm put in, right? I watched him in the first couple of games. Even the way he was moving in game was different. He was making AWP shots and moves and like, his in-game movement had improved, and I was feeling like, this guy's got swag out of the game and put it into the game. Everything's connecting, and he's popping off. And even that wasn't enough. Because like, there was
which one do you prefer? Do you prefer this haircut or the XQC one?
No, I prefer this haircut.
Yeah.
I prefer this haircut. Definitely, the perm is the way forward, man. Not for us older boys, but... For the young guys out there, the perm's the one. I personally couldn't rock it. I wouldn't do it anytime soon. But it looks good on him, man. He's got an upgrade. Yeah. I got to ask him. Maybe it was his girlfriend that said to him, like, yeah, you need to change this up. You need to get this. And I like it when it's the natural hair color, man. That bleach blonde was not doing him any favors. That's for real.
It was too big of a trend as well for a while there.
Yeah, I had the blonde tints for a while, so I did that. That was an idiotic moment of my life, but we do these things just out there wild. Once my hair was blue.
Blunder years?
Blunder moments. Blunder moments. Dude, I remember once I went and got it done like Super Saiyan Blue for like the Vegeta style. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Never we're going back to that. Never we're doing that again. Alexi had some rough starts to games as well that I was really shocked by. He said that it doesn't really affect his cooldown as well, but my God, man, like 0-12 at one point.
His entire dust too. It was tough. Which they won on overtime.
Mm-hmm.
He had 6 frags and 21 deaths.
Wow.
ADR of 35.
Oof. Oof. Yeah, that's
tough, not
man.
Great.
Mm-mm.
So he had a rough start to the series. Didn't go that much better on the...
They look so frustrated as well. Like, JL sometimes looks frustrated anyway, but you could see there was tilt. They were not a happy Na'Vi.
But I swear, this is a classic start of the year situation. Like, every team has it. It's like, we are this good. And then the off-season starts. Some people are grinding and you're taking a break or whatever, and you go in and like, we're so much better than these guys. We can beat them casually. Like, you're still in that same mindset of where you were at your peak in the last year.
Yeah.
And it's hard, man. It's really tough. You go up against the most hungry opponent ever, and in your mind, you're not ready to kind of chase that hunger again to reprove that you are that good. You're just going into an event thinking you're that good, and then every situation you lose is tilting. Every situation they are, you know, it's probably the same as casuals. You know, you go into a game, you get wrecked, and it's like you're cheating, but you just
you
translate
just think,
this
what is going
like,
on?
Word of cheating into like what is he doing, what oh.
How am I getting killed by that, this bot?
And
there's
it will
no
spread
way
into the team, you know. It does spread, and it makes you, you know, question, maybe you rotate faster, you know, let go of spots.
By the way, all this stuff you're saying, all this stuff you're saying is so funny, because Blade was like, this is great for us, because he goes, this is more data for me to work with, this is more things for me to look at, this is more things for me to know what I need to fix. So he was like happy with the situation. But yeah, it wasn't a comfortable start from them. And then obviously, if we just continue on the Na'Vi route before we... Actually, no, we'll finish with the rest of the quarter. So Eternal Fire, they looked good against Vitality, and they continue to do this. There is history in this matchup, but normally it's just the Zantara's show. By the way, if you look back at the matches that Eternal Fire played against Vitality, Zantara's and Woxic do hit another gear against this, but then against other top 5, top 10 teams, not so much. But those guys do perform here, and the desk, when they were breaking it down, they noticed how Magic would be calling like around where a new player would be and try and exploit that. Yeah. So like someone who might not be uncomfortable in a change that's happened on this map and just sending for him as well. And it's like, you felt Vitality pressured and scared in so many situations. That's what it looked like. Like they
their
were not
Anubis
comfortable.
Was so dominant. Like I feel like they got unlucky to have the halftime score they had. I think it was, I don't know, 9-3 or something. Like this on their T side. And it just felt like they had control over the game the entire way through, to be honest, against Vitality.
Yeah.
They didn't really get going. They got going to some degree, but it was way too much to catch up on.
Let me look at the match page, because I thought, like, Zyru, I always think, like, Zyru plays bad, but he, individually. So Mirage, 1.34 rating, but, like, this is the thing. He was 0.82 on Anubis. And it's like, that's when you need, when you have someone like a Zyru or a Simple or a Donk or a Manasi, that's when you need them, when your chips are really down, to be the ones that is still able to just shine and give you the opportunities into the game. But when even he couldn't do anything, that's rough, man.
I swear, but Santares with a 2.19 rating on Anubis.
Nuts. Absolutely nuts. He's loving it, man. I told a funny thing as well. So I did an interview with him. You know, in CSGO, he played with Mouse XL on.
Yeah.
He chose to play with Mouse XL on. And this is something we need to clip, by the way. We need to clip this and have this put on a short somewhere, because Santares played with Mouse XL all of CSGO. So I asked him in the interview, I said, there's no Mouse XL now in CS2. Like, how do you fix this? Because it's completely different. Like, if you played with Mouse XL to it suddenly be turned off, it's not like you can just do some maths and change the sensitivity and it will fit. And he said he had to adjust sensitivity and like DM like crazy. This guy is just a naturally gifted FPS player, because some people would never be able to recover from that as quickly as he did.
No,
like, it's look at his numbers.
With a wheel or something, you know, it's a huge difference.
And look at his CS numbers. He never went like completely off a cliff. He just grinded, had to fight his way back into it. It's crazy.
No, you recognize the, you know, the confidence in what he does and how he flicks. Like, it's so quick and crisp. It's just like straight to the head. And he's a joy to watch, honestly. Like,
I think he still plays with quite like a larger crosshair. Like, he's like, you know, like a I'd say a 1.6 medium or large crosshair kind of thing. That's what he used to be rocking with. I'll check that kind of bits of here and see if he's still doing it.
Yeah, yeah. No, but
he's not one of those like baby dot crosshair people.
Eternal Fire was beasting throughout this tournament. They were really, really good.
Yeah, man. It was very impressive.
It looks like
them.
You know, the whole team just fits together, you know? Like, it's
now.
Yeah, I feel like Jota makes sense. He was great during the games. You know, I think everyone had their kind of role, and you can see that everyone excels at different things. I was impressed with Voxic. His rifling was really, really good as well, as his AWPing.
And they're reuniting Jota with Wakadia as well, because obviously used to play together on Eternal Fire Academy. Wakadia moved up first. Jota went over to Sangar, right? He was a Sangar player.
Yeah, probably.
I think so. Yeah, probably. Double check. Quickly. I think it was, he went to Sangar, got some experience there, and then got to come to the main Eternal Fire roster. They told me in an interview that actually Jota played like 1 week with them on practice on the main Eternal Fire roster, but then they didn't like want to go through it at the time, so let him get some more experience and then brought him back in. So like, for him, this must be a dream come true, because you go on the academy team, you have a chance, you weren't quite ready for it, and now you are. And you, I'm Kalix, he deserves a lot of respect from his time in Space Soldiers to now, but Jota is just a different style of player, and he's going to add an extra element for them. And they also said he's like very vocal, like a big hyper of the team up. So Zantaras, you'll notice, is quite quiet. Madra and Woxic were the more loud ones. Wakadia is definitely not like a loud out there guy, but Jota was, he's got some lungs on him, man. He's really trying to put it out there.
I mean,
for
being
as well.
The first event you go with Eternal Fire and you're making it to the grand final, that must be
crazy. I'm not going to touch too much on Heroic, by the way, because obviously Heroic had to bring Madden back in. I know Madden's your boy, but it's a bit rough when you got to go bring Madden back in and he plays Spirit first game. So you kind of, they had a challenge on Anubis. They had a huge lead that they threw away, but I don't know, there's not much point touching on it too much.
But I'm still impressed with them, like throughout, like qualifying for it. I thought they played good.
They used the bounty to the best way possible.
Yeah, I think Sampaius played great. I didn't really see this Sampaius in Falcon.
He's back with Saw. I'm going to keep coming back to this. Some people, don't matter how good the in-game leader or how good the coach is, they just are not aware how to use every piece they have, you know?
Yeah.
You always have to be flexible. You always have to be someone who can understand every different player's needs. And that's so hard, you know? You could probably admit it yourself. You've said to a player, like, do this and do that, and you realize, actually, he's not set out for this. Some people are too strict on what they want to do. And I'll say that, like, from what I'm hearing from players, it feels and looks like Zonic tried to make something in Falcons that wasn't going to work with that fit of the last season, you know? And so, like some
his Pius, creation than this, I understand. Like, Well, Saw is just a fantastic coach. I think he's underrated, even though he's well appreciated, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we speak a lot about him highly, but I think people don't. It's because it's so hard to quantify, right, when he doesn't have the super trophies by his name. But he did it with the Ants roster first, and then he brought out a heroic team to fucking playoffs of a major. We've constantly played with roster issues with Dexter. Then again, another core of his players leave him. Nurtz leaves him. And then he's like, okay, build again. Let's go again. And like, remember, he smartly picked in the bounty his opponents to take the spot, to get a good position. It's so good, man.
Sorry, I just yawned. It's getting late in here, so that's why.
That's all good, man. It's all good.
It's not you, Banks. It's not you. No, hey, but I agree.
Everyone else who's watching is yawning as well. It's fine.
But yeah, super impressed, because I think no one really expects this particular heroic lineup to do anything damaging. It feels like kind of like an Ashe situation with the Gamer Legion. Where they're kind of shooting above the individual levels they have on the team. Not to say they don't have great individual talent, but if we're comparing to a Vitality, a FaZe, or G2, you know, you look at the tools that Saw has to work with, and it feels like he has to overachieve every single event if they're going to be relevant this year.
Yeah. Looking at semis, we'll start with G2 Eternal Fire. Eternal Fire impressed once again. Hunter, you already mentioned him, he was playing very well all tournament long.
Yeah.
But if he's like, you needed your Manasees and your Malbs to be up there with him. I don't care about Snax's rating and what he was doing. It's like there was a significant struggle that this G2 went through. It was a great series, but like it kind of showed some holes in the G2 play.
Yeah, I was expecting a little bit more from Heavy God. He was, because he's supposed to be one of those stars. And I think no one really went into this year thinking Hunter is going to be the star in this lineup. So
it probably shouldn't be, right? It definitely shouldn't be. I'm looking at my Manasi Malbs duo as the top, right? Malbs taking Nico's roles, and then Heavy God is like a star in anchor roles, you know? Like, he's shown he can do it all and is moldable and flexible. Well, funny thing here is Manasi was telling me how, so Heavy God's family's from Ukraine, so he speaks Russian as well. So when they go into a clutch, Manasi and him switch into Russian because it's better for Manasi. It's like easier for him to communicate. Even though Manasi's English is fantastic, it's so good that they can switch into it. So sometimes they just jump in with each other and can do it that way. So Heavy God can just switch instantly, no problem at all. Obviously, he's very multilingual.
That's actually
because he can speak Hebrew, Russian, Ukrainian, English. But yeah, I was talking to them, and Manasi's like, "Yeah, it's so cool. I can just switch into Russian. It's me and Heavy God and go." And like, that's obviously can make a big difference in how quickly he can react to things.
Yeah. That's actually I didn't know that. That's an interesting point.
Nice little tidbit there, because they used to have that with Nico and Hunter. They'd obviously go and speak Serbian, but no, now we got it on the other side as well.
Well, it seems to benefit Hunter anyways, because he's performing. Yeah. And he looked good. He looked really crisp.
And he's got to take more responsibility in this team with Nico not there.
Yeah. I liked it. Eternal Fire, they won fairly. But I still think, you know, G2 can still compete. They're not in that big of a trouble. They just need to kind of fit all the pieces in together, because I think it's the same situation as Vitality in a way, where they have to shift a lot of players to different spots and different responsibilities. So it's probably going to take a couple of months for them to kind of get the right fit.
The Na'Vi Spirit game in semifinals. Wow. So Na'Vi get pretty much destroyed on Dust 2.
Yeah.
At times, like, Na'Vi made it competitive, and then it's just Spirit did what they do. On Ancient, though, that overtime game, man, what was I watching? It was absolutely insane, because it felt like if there was a time for Na'Vi to strike, and to get a win over them, it would be now.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have Halley behind them. So you've got Blade, one of the greatest coaches of all time, behind your Na'Vi. You've got a Spirit who do not have Halley there. Their manager standing in for them. This must be a chance, right? But no, it didn't happen. And they, it felt like at times, I spoke to Blade a bit on the interview afterwards, and he was saying that like he could see rounds where they were moving too fast and they were not playing the rounds as they should do. They were trying to force the rounds to finish early. There was a couple of times they had like a 5v3 for Na'Vi, and they went back to take some mid control, which they could have just taken site control. And instead, then they got punished for it. Like Donk was just sat. Red Room kills two of them pushing through Donut. And he's like, Donk was in a lurk position of all things as well, right? You never see that. And it just got a bit sloppy and messy towards the end, you know? So yeah. Many times you had him on the ropes, you could have at least taken the map. And to go down like that's going to hurt. But I think semi-final, considering you face Spirit, still pretty good for them as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, they were struggling. In the end, it was a 10-7 lead for Spirit when they were on the T side. So they kind of crawled back to get this round into overtime, because it even 12-10 to win the last two, bring it to overtime. Yeah. They started overtime great, but yeah. I can definitely feel, but they probably have some frustrations left, Na'Vi.
Yeah. They're on boot camp here, by the way, in Katowice until... Yeah. So they're going to spend all their time on boot camp now until the next stage starts, till stage two of Katowice starts.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they're not fucking around, man. They're going full practice mode, full hardcore.
That's good to see.
Grand final. First map, very interesting. An incredible comeback. What was it like? 12-4 up for Spirit into a 16-14 overtime win on the map pick of Eternal Fire.
Yeah, 12-4.
Dude, that was a legit comeback. That was so insane. They can all be so proud of that. But then you get 13-6, 13-3, 13-8. And then Spirit just slapped them up, man.
I thought going into it that Eternal Fire might have a chance.
Said 3-0 or 3-1 for Spirit, man.
Like, even though Spirit looked good, they didn't look as good as, let's say, the Major, you know?
Like, okay.
I feel like they were, you know, some situation felt like you could see a lot more frustration, like even from Donk or other people within the team didn't have the same fluidity, which is natural at this stage of the tournament. But in the reverse, I felt like Eternal Fire had a little bit more of that going into it, that maybe they could shock. I thought Anubis would go to Eternal Fire, but the rest a bit unsure. But maybe they could have taken another map. But yeah, Spirit just stomped.
I would have loved if we'd seen Train.
Yeah, I wish to see Train as well.
I felt like if Eternal Fire wanted a chance, rather than pick that Dust 2, yeah, so they picked Anubis, then they should have picked Dust 2 as their second option. They should have picked Train rather than Dust 2 as their second option. Because then you would have at least had a bit more maybe of a chance. But obviously, I don't know how well they've played Train or what they've practiced it in. But I just feel like you needed to do something as a surprise, because Dust 2 is such a good map for Spirit that, like,
yeah
you were kind of lost anyway. And then obviously, Donk gets MVP. I actually thought Shiro had a chance, considering how well he played in the grand final.
Yeah, plus.
But I think he was just too far. He was just too far under. But Shiro played a sick grand final, man.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean,
sick.
What can you say? Spirit, they absolutely destroyed the Eternal Fire. This they even destroyed them on Anubis, technically.
Yeah.
Before that,
if they just owned it up, it would have been fine. On that last couple of rounds, it just slipped away. Frustrations got to him. Donk's interview with HLTV, very honest as well. He even spoke to me on the stage about it, that like he gets tilted sometimes still because he wants to do better. He doesn't think his teammates should have to do it because he makes mistakes. I love that attitude, how hard he wants to work and how hard he wants to push things.
Yeah. Oh.
But it was a great start to the year, the best start to a 2020 to a season of Counter-Strike we've had. Much better than what we had in the past for the full groups and the spring groups. I really like the way of doing this. So
yeah, I like it. Before it felt a little bit monotone, if that makes sense. And this was interesting. I really enjoyed the Blast Bounty.
And now it leads us into where we're at today, mate. We're here in Katowice. Well, I am. You're at home.
I'm still at home.
But yeah, we got Katowice just around the corner. And at least what's crazy here is that Katowice is obviously such a big event, but this is the first time it's being done off the VRS rankings. So, like, we're all sat right now, and it's not guaranteed for any of these teams. I think Spirit obviously going as massive favorites, but like with the mouse situation, with Falcons,
full tournament right now, not playing, right? No.
Oh, by the way, it's not called playing anymore. It's called Stage One. That's what I was told to me today on my media day.
Okay, on HL TV it says playing still.
Yep, they haven't changed it, but it is officially for the world out there, Stage One. And you advance to Stage Two, but you qualify for the playoffs, to get the wordings correctly. Yeah, yeah. That's how it should be.
Yeah, you have Mongols in there. Okay. I'm just looking at all the teams here. It's an interesting... And when did you say the invites came through?
Oh, the invites came through, so Valve standings on the 6th of January.
Okay, 6th of January. So basically,
that's
why
G2
is
still first. G2 first, Spirit second, Mongols third. Na'Vi gone down to 7th at that point.
So
the Heroic Core was 8th, but that's now Falcons.
So, like some of these, right? This is just a random question that pops up into my head. So, some of the roster move haven't really been announced, or basically, that would affect the invites.
It didn't affect the invites, it's the core. So, like, for example, the invite that happened, right? 8th place was Heroic, Dexter, Kixan, Nurtz, Shush, Tezzez. Three of those players, Dexter, Kixan, and Tezzez, went to Falcons. So, Falcons take that spot.
Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah. Makes sense.
And, like, the Mouse one, obviously, it doesn't matter because it's just one player changing. It's that Zelix guy coming in for Shuhei, not Spinks. But, yeah, nothing else really touches it or hurts it in any way.
Oh, I'm looking at this bracket. We have Spirit and we have a Na'Vi going into the same bracket in Group B.
Mm-hmm.
That's a spicy one.
But you want to start by looking at Stage One to start with. You need to look at Stage One, man.
Stage One? Mm-hmm. The play-in.
Yeah, on your HLTV, I'll say play-in.
Yeah.
So look here what we have. Because I believe, I haven't seen all the Heroic players here. I've seen some of them. Heroic's got their full roster. So Tanir is in, and he was a beast, and they're going up against Liquid again. Remember, they faced at Blast Bounty and won.
I think Heroic can win this.
I am very much thinking Heroic take the first game.
Yeah.
Then you've got Complexity versus Eternal Fire. I'm sorry, Complexity, but you lost the Leech already. That's Eternal Fire all day. 3D Max FlyQuest, by the way, because obviously 3D Max being quite highly ranked because of what happened at the major, like 3D Max still don't wow me, and I feel like FlyQuest can do incredibly well, man. Yeah. Did they face each other? Let me just check. They don't know if they faced each other. Did they face each other? No, they didn't face each other yet. That's why. But yeah, that's a real interesting one. Astralis versus MIBR. Bro, I don't know with Cadian on a rifle, I'll be honest. But if Staun doesn't pop off and Device doesn't drop 30, then MIBR could take that. But I'm kind of very like...
I think this is such an up in the air game.
Yeah, I'm so confused about what to expect from Astralis, I'll be honest. I want them to do well sometimes, and I just don't see them ever hit the peak that I think they're going to hit.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they can get to that point, but... Yeah, as you say, Cadian on rifle is not that exciting.
The bottom of this bracket, by the way, is crazy. Because, like, if you look at this, the last two parts of the bracket, Pain, Virtus.pro, obviously, yes, Flamus is very interesting, but Electronics in-game leading, they're playing Pain. I don't think they're going to beat Pain. Payne's got a lot more in their bank than they have. Then you've got Saw Gamer Legion. The new Saw was obviously very disappointing, but Gamer Legion is interesting. Not obviously great without Flammas, but Rez is coming.
Has Rez... Did Rez play a game already, yeah?
Yeah, Rez played a blast.
Ah, okay, yeah.
I'm pretty sure... Did he play a blast? Let me double check that.
Yeah,
I didn't
cover
the game, Legion Games. Yeah, they lost to Payne, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and then,
it's interesting, but probably up in the air as well. But I think the lower two...
The wild card big? I don't think as bad as people think they are. I think Stamets was a pretty good in-game leader. I feel like big is so interesting now with Hyped because it's completely different than anything Sirison had. And QB just fits in very well for the roles and how they want him to play. He said he's enjoying speaking German again. Obviously being on international teams.
Yeah. I get
Imperial
that.
Female, it's obviously rough for them. They've got now Tori in-game leader, doesn't have a visa, so she won't be there. Bubble, the coach, is going to stand in. And at least he'll know the game, right? He did play in 2003 last time. Sorry, 2023. 2023, he last played like a competitive game, but I think he should still be able to fight. But they're going up against Furia.
But if we compare to a Na'Vi and Furia, just to like kind of do it that way.
Oh, there's a big gap there. Yeah.
You know, if there was like 1-2 rounds away from taking it to Na'Vi, maybe if they play to the same, you know, kind of capacity, maybe there's a chance.
Okay. I reckon they'll take a map. I'll give you that. I think they'll take a map.
I think it all depends, you know, like, you know, how the Brazilian boys, you know, go into the game. If they're too cocky, mm-hmm. you know, saying we're going to smash this and kind of underestimate them a bit, they might get a grip Imperial and kind of run away with it a bit. Because they're not
but
bad
I feel
at shooting.
Like,
they're pretty good.
I feel like Fury is a team, though, that would play like some mega confident, not give them a single chance to even get into the game, you know? Like, when they think there's a chance for them to thrive, they'll just go crazy.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel either like some way, of the mistakes Na'Vi made was, like,
Furia
sitting back
win.
Into it and trying to play their game.
Furia should win. I'm just, like, kind of entertaining the idea of what if in my...
All right, what... Out of these teams then, right? So we've got 16 teams here. What 8 teams do you see making it through?
Turn on Fire.
Cool. I agree.
I think Payne,
yep.
I think probably Big.
Big. I'm going to add Heroic to the mix. They got Tanir back.
Yep. Heroic.
So that's 4.
Oh, this now it gets tougher. Because also if you look at the bracket and how they're going to end up.
Yeah, so that's it. You always got to look at this bracket part because, like, Liquid could be down already. Yeah.
Like, if Liquid
but then you
lose,
would think Liquid...
they would play Complexity. They would probably win that match, though.
And then they'd have to play another game who would be, like, the loser of Heroic Eternal Fire, right?
Is it?
Is that how it works?
Don't the brackets reverse after the round 2?
I might do then. You might be right.
So it might be that they play like Big or Furia. Because otherwise, why would they bracket it up like this?
Yeah, you're right.
Then it'd just be a group.
Yeah, then that would make it safe that you don't have to play the same person twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're correct. Then Liquid could go through then, right? That could be your 5th.
Yeah. Liquid could go through.
Who else? I don't want to say Astralis because I feel like they're going to let us down, but they should make it.
I mean, I could see, let's say, a Virtus Pro making it through. Let's say they lose the first game. They go down to the lower bracket. They play Gamer Legion or Saw. They pop up, and then they're probably playing the loser of Astralis 3D Max.
Well, then they beat 3D Max, yeah. Goals of Virtus Pro 6. Astralis we put through from based on what you just said there.
Yeah.
And then Furia, maybe?
Maybe a Furia, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's,
That's not too bad.
It's tough, but there's going to be some upsets. I'm 100% sure. Yeah, always, like, the logical is. Brain is not going to be covering this.
But remember this, correct. No best of ones again. It's all best of threes at least. We're in a good spot, man.
That's true.
That changes things massively. It makes our lives much better.
And there's it's a bigger chance we might get Train.
Oh, yes.
Because there has to be some of these underdog teams that are like, okay, this is our chance. We're going to be fucking...
Let's take it.
Mowing train, and just figuring it 100%. Out very, very early. So, hopeful. It's a big chance for them to get into a big tournament. So, my fingers are crossed.
And then, obviously, going to the next stage. Let's click into that.
So the
stage two.
So we have G2, Falcons, Vitality, FaZe in kind of one group. We're waiting for their opponents.
Yep. Then Spirit, Na'Vi in the same group on the same side of the bracket with Metals and Mongols on the other side.
This is crazy.
It's so ridiculous, isn't it? Mongols can farm their side, especially the fact they're on the same side as Metals. If Na'Vi's to do it at any point, they need to beat them in the upper bracket semis. But obviously, we don't know who they'll face. Let's just say this. Based on all the teams we just said there, yeah? Which teams do you think will make playoffs? Spirit, probably guaranteed.
I think Spirit and Na'Vi will go through on the Group B.
Okay.
I think Vitality and G2 are going through on Group A.
Vitality and G2. And then you got two more, remember, because it's 6, not 8 for the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
Because some go straight to semis, right? And then there's 4 for the others. So two more teams. Okay. And some of the names we already said in there. Could some of the others go through?
I think some random, like a random team. But
random?
Not random, that's wrong. But some of the play-in teams, or what was it, stage one teams?
Stage one teams, yeah.
Stage one teams could definitely go through. Like, I could see a Pain making it through. I could see an Eternal Fire, depending on where they get matched up in the group, could make it as the two other teams. Because they are the ones that, if I look at this list of stage one, I think Pain and Eternal Fire is the teams that are the biggest in my book right now.
Okay, nice. I like that. I think Liquid have a chance of making playoffs. I know they didn't show it in Blast Bounty, but I believe what they can do. Yeah. I think there could be a shot in for them. Some more time to work together. They're always saying they want to grind, so let's see it. Let them show it to us. Do you know what's interesting, though? I'm just going to compare the money.
Oh, that was insane.
Look at this, right? 400k first place for this. If I look up Blast Bounty... First place got 288,000, so that's less. But like second place, 180,000 at Katowice. Third to fourth, 80,000. Eternal Fire got 85,000 for second place. Remember, this was only an 8-team LAN, and the rest was online. That's a big, like, the money they got is the same as top four at Katowice for the Blast Bounty. Yeah. And you're positioning the teams you beat, and obviously the money will factor in for VRS. So this is a conversation we all need to look at, all teams need to look at across the whole year.
Yep.
Everyone has to be aware of this. It's very interesting, man.
Hey, because obviously the prestige and
everything
whole...
about Katowice.
Everything changes.
Yeah. Because just you get one upset win, and that's a huge amount of points as well. You're beating a top team, you know? They can't crumble. Like, do you remember Cologne last year? Spirit went out like 13th to 16th.
But
that's crazy.
Yeah, but it's going to be one of these situations. Like, let's say Mouse get into this situation we talked about earlier. They are crumbling. They're not getting in. Like, Brolin is not, getting as much of out of the IGL role. He gets sick of it. And all of a sudden, they're shuffling again. And they get into the spiral of having bad results for half a year.
Mm-hmm.
they could be in really bad spots where they have to go through all these qualifiers online, try to grind through the CCT tournaments, and it's just going to be like not the fun. Like you can't make these like mega drastic roster changes mid-season. If things don't work, they're just not going to work. And you just kind of have to stick with it to some degree, or like sacrifice a part of the season because you're not getting that automatic invite.
Oh no. Oh, it's going to get very interesting.
There's a lot more at stake with making these roster changes as well.
Definitely. But I'm looking forward to Katowice, man. I won't be there for the playoffs. They're doing a new system that people will see. That basically, so in the past seasons, it was like me and Shox did interviews for Plast, Kato and Cologne. But this time, there's no desk for the B stream. So it's only commentators and me for the B stream. And they've moved Freya, Stunner and Shox on A stream, all as desk hosts and interviewers, all doing what they want. Like the role is flexible. Yeah. And that means I've been given B stream, which is me and the commentators, to get more gameplay. And like, I'll try and bridge the gap between everything, but it means they won't use me at all for the arena. So my third Katowice, so I won't be in the arena. Big sad. I won't see all the fans out there. But like, companies need to switch things up, make different products and change things. It sucks to not be in the arena because I love the crowd, man. But it's still one of the best events to watch of the year.
Yeah.
Cologne, Majors, Katowice, World Finals. Those are your big ones.
There's history in it.
Exactly. It's all about that history. But I'm unsure, man, because I don't know. It's going to be interesting how the history continues. Like, if Cologne goes back to be a major, we'll talk about this. This is another thing for another conversation. But Cologne could be a major next year, supposedly. Will they bring Katowice back to try and be a major at some point again? Last one was 2019. Will they move away from Katowice? I don't know. We'll have to see. All right. Our last thing to do, Devwalk, because we have done a long time once again for episode 2. We have got, and we promised everyone this, that at the end of every episode, we would look at our viewers, our listeners' questions, and answer them for you. So I'll read the first one out because it's directly for you. It comes from Unova Red, and he says, Devwalk, looking back at your time with Fnatic, what are the most memorable matches you had the privilege to witness as a coach?
I mean, the first thing that kind of pops up for me is definitely like the Olaf Meister and the Flames, the Fuse.
I think
that one just like pops up into my mind because I can remember how excited I was, you know, like just hearing the comms. I'm like, I'm holding it. It's like, yes, you know, everyone just jumping up and screaming. And
did you know how epic moment that was going to be when it happened? Like, did you realize that it would become this moment?
I mean, I just rushed in front of Olaf's face and I remember doing this, you know, like...
Wait, I can't see you.
I was like kind of rushing forward to Olaf and I was like, you know, kind of slap your fingers against the... and he's doing the same, you know, and it was a magical moment. Really tense game. I mean, memorable. I definitely remember the Olaf boost situation as well. It's stressful. Not my favorite moment, but I definitely, it haunts.
He didn't
my
say
mind.
Favorite. He said memorable. So this is good.
Yeah.
If you had that same situation again, right, with the Olaf boost, would you approach it exactly the same way?
No, I think the game itself, I still think that I don't think I would change the in-game stuff. What I would have done probably differently is approach the referees and made sure that it's way more clear than it was. To kind of not get this kind of shock reaction, because at the end of the day, there was no rule against it. There was never a rule against it. But the rule kind of got applied after we used it in a
which
situation.
Which is bullshit on its own, but obviously no one was aware of it.
Like an unfortunate happening for us, but I would have approached the, you know, the beforehand, the preparation part way more differently than the actual match. You know, letting the ref know this is what we have, we want to make sure that this is legit, kind of situation. But yeah, having it, I think in just retrospect of all esports, some of the most amazing moments of esports has come from either bugs or you know, kind of weird plays. Like I remember watching like Pudge Fountain Hooks, I think Navi Dota used to.
Yeah, this is old school.
And it was insane to watch as a viewer. You're just laughing like, what, you know, what the fuck, he did it again, you know. And just like seeing the panic of the hero just spawning in the pool, just instead killed by the fountain. These are some like super memorable moments for me in esports. And I understand that they can be made illegal after the fact, but I think the creativity and stuff that we find, there's a bunch in 1.6 as well.
Yep.
To be completely fair. And they always have this kind of, it's a gray zone area. And I think still memorable. Wish maybe it didn't affect my life as much as it did. But yeah.
You are the most hated person in Counter-Strike for a long time.
Yeah, we were not loved.
No, that was, oh bro, that was horrible. Because it was like, it was still like a juvenile reaction as well. Despite obviously, it's like people ignored what came before from you guys, and it was just focused on like, yeah, you guys scammers, cheaters, and it didn't help like with players as well on your team. Oh god.
No, I think everything building up to that tournament, it was just like I don't know if it's what's the reverse version of euphoric moment?
oh no!
That kind of just exploded because we were obviously like cheating accused, and everyone was hating us
beforehand.
And this added on an extra layer,
and then you do this.
Yeah, so it was just like an explosion of hatred that occurred because of it.
You know, but what's memorable for me from this so far is that both your stories are Olaf in very different lights. The Olaf boost into the into the fucking Olaf fire. Oh god, this is nuts.
Those two, I remember one more sweetly than the other.
Yeah. What's the next question we got here? Let me have a look. This new one. So this comes from Skorga. This is from the Discord. It says, has the new qualification system for the Austin Major combined with Valve's current rankings disproportionately disadvantaged the European region, with Europe receiving 16 of the 32 spots, some of which are influenced by past performances from teams like Liquid and Mongols, while the Americas get 11 and Asia Pacific gets 5. Does this allocation truly reflect regional strength? Additionally, with dual region teams required to compete in the region with the highest rank of the spots they qualify for, how might this impact the competitive landscape?
I think in general, it's not really reflective of the strength of the regions, but in all fairness, Europe fucked up. There's not like, but Europe fucked up. So, you know, we have to deal with it. So I don't think the spot allocation is like unfair in any degree, because they earned the spots. That's how it is. They earned them. So
we have to fight for the spots back now, right? And prove it, because we had so many of the tier two, tier three teams that failed where they should have done better, you know?
Yeah.
Where they were expected to do better.
There's nothing else but like hate on us Europeans, because we kind of fucked up that situation, because it could have been a completely reverse where there would be fewer spots for them. So they earned their spots. The allocation, I think, is kind of fair. You know, they did it.
He also says, based on the early results from Blast Bounty, which teams do you predict will secure spots at the major? Blech. I think there's some teams like your Spirits, G2, Na'Vi, Vitality have got so many points anyway. Unless they mass, I don't think there's any way, right, they can be out of the European top 16.
I mean,
they'd have to bot out of everything.
There has to be some incredible drama happening in their team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shocker moves. They kind of have to get into a little bit of an if factor where IGL drops, changes the whole core of the team for that to be relevant. But I don't really see that happening. And also, I mean, going into the year, the teams that have been kind of contracted with the league, as you've said, they accumulated enough points to be up there anyways. So the first 6 months, I don't think there's going to be a lot of changes, but I think it's more about like when we get to that half cut of the year, that's when these points are going to delve into a distance where now it's, you know, more open for people to hurt, I guess, the top tier players in the space.
Before I give him like the response on who we will qualify, let me just look now. So complete rankings, if I go on Global Valve ranking. So if I'm just to predict, I'm looking at like what we have here for teams that will make it. Spirit, G2, Mongols, FaZe, Na'Vi, Vitality, Mouse, Falcons, Eternal Fire, Liquid should be like the top 10, I think, should be secure. Especially considering Liquid and Mongols will definitely qualify from their regions. NA for Liquid, Asia for Mongols, right?
Pain could definitely make a push to get up into that top 10 spots. They do well in this.
And that's it, right? There's such for the teams on the lower levels down from the top 10, there is such, like Eternal Fire jumped up to 9th. 7 places they jumped just from Blast Bounty, you know? Beating G2 and Vitality. That's a huge step up. So, like, the rest of it for the 32 teams that'll be there, there's such a huge...
It's completely random.
Yeah. It's like, it's impossible to predict, but it makes every event we have this year and every podcast we do, this is going to be a talking point and something we talk about across all of the All About Counter-Strike podcast episodes. It's going to be fun, man.
Because it's going to be, like, even some of the top names like Fnatic and NIP, it's not sure they're even gonna get close to receiving an invite. So like they have to grind, they have to win like every single tournament they're in at this point to be in the conversation, because they're low.
Look
down
at this,
I
right?
think Fnatic is 45th. I don't even know where NIP is. Here. They're 52. So like,
well, look at this. Collusion and Poker, right? Is a 16 team event with a 1.25 million prize pool. But I've read, and I can't confirm this now, but I haven't finished reading it, that some of the dates that they're playing, this won't affect the major, the Austin major. That'll affect the following season, but that means like the teams that are going, there's hardly any of the top 10 here. Right now, it's only Mongols, FaZe, Mouse, and Falcons. Everyone else is outside the top 10.
I think it was something to do with, you remember when we were speaking with Donk and Monacy, right? That they didn't want to fly back and forth for different stages. They wanted to stay in kind of boot camp and not get the jet lag. So I think that's probably the reason why a lot of the top teams have shifted out.
Yeah, big change up. It's kind of crazy, right? This is all going to be how they're affecting, how they're looking at things.
Yeah, it might be that they, you know, some people are not going to be in that position. They're going to be in a different position maybe when they come further along the line, where it's like, oh fuck, we need to grind every invite we get, can't be skipping and deciding things.
Maybe I was wrong. Maybe it's not Cluj, maybe it's Bucharest and not Cluj that is the cutoff. Let me just check.
Okay,
I want to make sure I'm saying the right thing, because I keep getting confused, because this was originally not supposed to be there. So it was supposed to be in Argentina.
Well, either way, I think.
Oh no! The cutoff is on the 7th of April. So after Cluj, so yeah, Cluj will be fine. So teams not going on that won't have a chance to earn points there.
Wait, what?
So Bucharest,
is
a different event. Bucharest is taking part on the 5th of April to the 13th of April. That won't be included. That's a 1.25 million event as well. but Cluj is going to be included, its points and the prize money.
Yeah, for when they invite.
So those teams can make a last-minute jump up of points here.
Yep.
But there's a lot of top teams skipping that. So this could be something that really bites them in the ass.
Yeah, that shifts the ranking a lot.
Mm-hmm. But obviously, there's another thing. I spoke to one player, and obviously I can't name who it was, but he said that their organizations get appearance fees. So this is public. This isn't hidden information. But they get appearance fees by signing to go with Blast and ESL for events. So it's not a partner league, yeah? Because there is no partner leagues. But because their organization gets like an appearance fee that isn't included in your Valve rankings, it just goes to the orgs will tell like the Navis and the G2s of this world, go to this ESL event, go to this Blast event, blah, 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 yeah? But not to a PGL event, because PGL put all their money into the prize money and into the event itself. So they've balanced theirs differently, not in the revenue. I don't know, maybe there is revenue share for PGL. I'd have to ask to find out. But they've just got different business models. But that's why the PGL money's higher. But there's no appearance fee, which obviously some orgs will be like, well, then let's not do it, you know? But if a team does like...
But it's got to be that weird balance, like you say, like you're going to earn a little bit more points from the PGL events, even if the top teams necessarily aren't there, which is going to scale down the event a little bit.
We've still got four top 10 teams, right? So the points come down on who you beat is different, yeah? But the prize money is going to jump up as well. So we're going to have to keep an eye on this so hard to fully understand it, because this is a crazy...
Yeah.
It's a crazy thing to go through.
A lot of things to consider. Full crazy.
I guess also, because if the other teams went, so say teams did Blast Battle like Na'Vi and Spirit, then they did Caddo and go all the way, they go deep, right? And then they go to Clues. That's like nearly 3 months on the road with no break. That's also a lot of CS, right? That's too hard.
Yeah, I don't think that's feasible. Especially coming into a major, they probably want to be mentally rested to perform and also get the right practice in, because I think that's one of the things, you know, like when you're on the road like that, you barely get any practice, or
the quality
you don't
get of it,
good practice, because you don't want to play the people that are in the tournament to mess up your chance. So there's like a lot of weird moments where sometimes you're gonna have like a 6-7 hour practice day or something, but you only really got anything out of 2 hours.
All right, let's answer the last question as well and close this up. A guy called Tibius, he says, is Counter-Strike transitioning into a star power era where fans are more invested in individual players rather than teams, with personalities like Munacy building massive following independent of their organizations such as G2? Are we seeing a shift in how audiences engage with the game? What impact could this have on team loyalty, sponsorships, and overall esports ecosystem? Okay, I can start on this, because first of all, excellent question and very well written. God knows where you're from, but that was superb English. I wouldn't say star power era, but I will say that Counter-Strike has always seemed to me that people are more fans of players than organizations. There are people like me who just follow, like, Na'Vi is my team, I love them. There are still lots of people like that, but we're not like a sport yet where people just follow the club. Astralis built that in Denmark, but not many other companies have been able to do it. And it seems to have always been like someone will absolutely love Simple, or they'll love Zyru, or they'll love Donk, or they'll love Munacy, and they follow that the whole way. I don't think like star power era would be the right way of saying it, but I don't think teams are going to massively miss out on it. But I do think, and some players have this already, they have individual sponsorships outside of their organization. So the org pays them to have the jerseys and sponsors and has to follow all the obligation. But then a player might have a personal sponsorship with a company in outside of his contract with the team, because he has such a big audience. And obviously, like, some players have bigger social media following than the organizations they join, because they've been smart with how they do it. It all depends on if they have a good manager or good people behind them. Like Munacy has his brother that does everything with him, who's an awesome guy. So I think team loyalty is not maybe there the same way as sport, but that's up to an organization to build. And they also need to get the players to be loyal and stay with them and treat them good. But it is, I think it's it's not something that is affecting the overall esports ecosystem, because the organizations are trying to make their money on these rev shares, and not just jersey sales are going to do it. That's not enough. But then players need to always do more for an org than just play the game. Yeah. But some players just play the game. And I think some players have still not woken up to that. And then they wonder, look at this. I don't need to name players, but go back many years and look at the players that are now, who were God tier 5-6 years ago, who are still doing well. Is that because they invested in social media? Is it because they still stayed active? And look at the ones who didn't do interviews, didn't do content, didn't look at any streaming, and they've completely gone out of the equation. Like, you're a perfect example of this, Devilwalk. Most of your teammates didn't want to ever do interviews. They sent you. And then you're the one who got invited to do talent work at a major. You're the one who got asked to do coaching. You're the one who asked to do podcasts and interviews and other shows.
It is true, even though I could have done it better. But I also agree with you completely on the whole like bit of things. I think, you know, I think not necessarily that we're going to a star player era, like you say, because I think it's always kind of been at that place back and forth. I think the big difference is, like you say, we have smarter players doing smarter choices with their followings and sponsorships and having more expertise behind them in reality. So I think they can push that a little bit more. But I think as an org, you've always tried to put a player's face on your brand rather than the reverse. Like, you can look at the recognition between Crimson and Fnatic, or, you know, like, he's been there 10 years. Like,
yeah, that doesn't happen often in CS.
No,
in
and people associate the player with the org, you know, and the org with the player. So I think, you know,
even look at Heaton now. Heaton was on SK for most of his success, but everyone says Heaton and NIP.
So, like,
that was the original.
Orgs are just trying to brand the player into the org rather than the reverse, so to say. But I think everyone has always followed players, you know, a big fan of, like, you know, people who are big fans of Forest in 1.6 or whatever would follow him and watch every game he played, no matter if he played for SK, NIP, Fnatic, you know, people jump ship for their favorite players and, you know.
Yeah.
It's what we do. We want to see that, you know. I think it's going to be the same for like a player like Donk. He might stay his whole career in Spirit, but if he doesn't, I think a lot of people are Donk fans and not necessarily Spirit fans.
For sure. Well, that was maybe longer than the first episode. We'll have to wait and see when it comes out at the end. But episode 2 is done. Devilwalk, we have rock and rolled with it once again. I said about us bringing some guests on. That will happen when we get back to being at home. But for now, I'm on the road. The next episode will probably be after Katowice. But make sure you join the Discord. You can see all the links on allaboutcs.gg. We're across every platform right now that's possible. Thank you very much for watching. I hope you enjoyed it. My voice is absolutely cooked, but I'm going to repair and get ready for Katowice. And then we'll rinse and repeat this show all over again. See you next time.